Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
David Brancaccio here, in for Brian Lehrer. About 9 years ago, the Sierra Club's magazine proposed to answer, I think, a fascinating question. It's an environmental group, of course. So in an ideal world, according to the Sierra Club, we'd all be driving electric cars powered by wind and solar. That's what we'd use to charge them up. But it is not a perfect world, the Sierra Club conceded. And so the question back then was, which gas station brand is the most environmentally sound? The article was entitled, Pick Your Poison. And back in 2001, oil companies were rated by the Sierra Club as really bad, bottom of the barrel, middle of the barrel, and then the best ones were at the top of the barrel. You know where this is going, right? Among the two companies at the top of the barrel, most environmentally friendly, in 2001, BP. And I think the other one was Sunoco. I haven't forgotten that. After 3.5 months of hell, BP is having actually not a horrible day today. There is guarded optimism that the pumping of mud into the well has worked, as we heard during the news, with the company calling it a significant milestone. And White House Energy Advisor Carol Browner says about two-thirds of the spilled oil is now gone.
The vast majority of the oil has been contained, it's been burned, it's been cleaned, and I think that's good news for the people of the Gulf.
She was speaking on the CBS Morning News program. She also said Mother Nature is doing and will continue to do her part to get rid of what's around. Now, just under 5 million barrels of oil flowed out of the well. Sometimes scientists are questioning the administration's assessment that we just heard, saying that some of the oil may have dropped to the ocean floor where it's tough to see and is still causing problems, they worry. The spill cost the lives of at least 11 people on that rig and has savaged the economy of an entire region. And BP is going to have to work hard to fix their brand so that, A, anyone buys another gallon of gasoline from them, and, B, they continue to get lucrative government business, and, C, so they don't get sued out of existence. Here to help me explore whether or not BP's brand is a hopeless cause or not is Elsie Mayo, the principal of Mayo & Company, a business consulting firm based here in New York. Hello, Elsie.
Hi, David.
Now, Elsie's pioneered a concept called soul branding, soul, S-O-U-L, and she helps companies actually practice what they preach on ethical and environmental issues. So let's give it a go here on BP's brand. Now, they already have this logo that looks a bit like either the Green Party logo or the Greenpeace's logo, mm-hmm. right? So they got this cute brand that looks all green. And I guess we'll have to modify that a little bit, put a little ocean motif or seagull. That would help a little bit. But, you know, if people see that, they're just going to snort with derision after all that's happened, right?
Yes, and rightly so. Part of the fix that BP is facing is really a fix in delivery on the promise that symbol represents. And that symbol has been dubbed the Helios. And you know, Helios is the sun god in ancient Greece. And it was because of their campaign and their name change. And when they instituted that symbol in the early 2000s, that they had the reputation that you cited earlier as among the most environmentally sensitive, because their reputation as communicated by that brand preceded our experience of any problems. The fix now is much deeper than changing the brand mark. And the fix is much more about restoring trust that what happened here is not a signal of an endemic problem and a lack of social responsibility.
Well, I don't see the phone lines flashing now from BP, you know, calling in to hire us both to fix it. But if they did call in, and in the unlikely event you took the business, how do you start reestablishing trust? I mean, a lot of it has to do with, in the past, did you live up to your previous statements? And BP does, unfortunately, have a problem with that right now.
They do. They do. And, you know, what they're going through now is not an enviable position for anyone, for any organization. You know, we've worked with leading organizations, nonprofits, for-profits, and I must say that every leader that we've ever talked to wants to do the right thing. So, you know, we give them the benefit of the doubt, of course. We're in the middle of an interesting shift in paradigm where doing the right thing has meant Gordon Gekko style making the most money.
Yeah, doing the right thing by our shareholders for the next quarter.
Exactly. But increasingly, and I think this BP incident puts a fine point on it, most of us are sensitized to the fact that we are living in a closed system called, you know, spaceship Earth, if you will. And everything that each of us does affects an aspect of that closed system. And in it, business is the juggernaut. Business has potentially the biggest impact on global economies, the global environment, as well as on an individual level, the people who work for that company. So BP is facing a wonderful opportunity if it looks at things in terms of that kind of continuum, stepping into the new paradigm from the old one, getting a hold of its value system, and holding itself accountable for living it.
We've been already getting some fascinating input from our listeners on our Facebook site. Steve Deering writes, "I trust oil companies to destroy the earth that has made them so much money." That's what he trusts. And Kenneth Dupuy writes, "I honestly don't think BP needs to make amends at all except by killing the well, compensating the aggrieved, and cleaning up to the best of their ability. This could have happened to any oil company, and we as oil-addicted humans are as much to blame for this catastrophe as anyone." I mean, that may be true, but that's not something BP is going to be able to say out loud. You know, you bought our gas. You're not going to get off our fossil fuel energy source anytime soon. You know, you're at fault. I mean, that's going to go absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, but as that caller or writer on Facebook did, he took some accountability for his role in keeping this kind of industry alive. You know, the extractive industries are, by their nature, they're taking things out of the earth. And by our nature in our society today, we use those products day to day. We're sitting here in a studio. There's, you know, metal, there's equipment, there are things that have been extracted. So each of us does have a responsibility. We're all playing a part. The new paradigm that I'm talking about is one in which we humbly honor that and put ourselves deliberately on a path of minimizing the negative impact and maximizing the well-being of life on Earth. This is not just pie-in-the-sky talk. You know, on a personal level, people are encouraged, of course, by the economy, becoming more prudent in their spending patterns, becoming more conscious of healthful food, of buying local to reduce the impact of carbon emissions in terms of food production and transportation. And likewise, we look to our corporations, which are the juggernaut in our globe, for what are they doing about it?
So what would you expect if BP has, in fact, gotten religion on these issues? They have to do something big that surprises us, that would somehow demonstrate the fact that they see things as more than just fulfilling analysts' expectations next quarter. I mean, something big that confounds their critics in terms of embracing some kind of new sustainable policy?
Well, it depends on their objective. I mean, you know, they look at what they've done in stages. You know, they're in mop-up now, right? I mean, figuratively and literally. They're mopping up their image. They've entered a Lindsay Lohan strategy of, you know, they've gone into rehab, if you will, you know, secreted off to Siberia and chastised. But now the question is, what will change in a fundamental way? You know, other companies have gone through this before. Shell went through this it was years ago. It was in the late 90s, I believe, through the Brent Spar incident.
It's in the North Sea, I think, yeah.
Yes, where they decommissioned an oil container. And they had gone through the legal channels and gotten a legal okay to basically leave it there. you know, put it out there in very deep sea and leave it there, and that would be okay. But civil society kind of reared its head and said, hang on a second, that is not okay. And so initially, you know, there was some resistance in the old paradigm, like, we've done the legal thing. But Shell stepped up to the plate. And if you look on their website today and search for Brent Spar, they're not hiding it. You know, you can click on and see their point of view, which says, essentially, we made a boo-boo.
And it is an important point, Elsie, that you're making, that it's frankly not just about BP. The industry, fairly or unfairly, the other oil companies are also being tarred by some of this. And in fact, a number of them, including BP, have come together. They're ponying up some serious cash. It's going to add up to, I think, about $1 billion to create this rapid response system in case, God forbid, there's another blowout of a well somewhere. I mean, is that a demonstration of something that you'd be looking for in order to establish trust?
I think it's more comforting to know that they're actively managing risk. And that they're able as an industry to collaborate and cooperate. It makes sense to do that, to pool their expertise and resources to do that. Does that indicate that they're ahead of the curve? Not necessarily. I mean, that's a smart risk management approach.
Yeah. How come they didn't have this ahead of time? Now, there is I don't mean to imply that every oil company is exactly the same. Marilyn in Westchester, you have a comment in this area?
Yes, I do. Frequently, this kind of argument is put on the company in that, you know, it's an accident that could happen to anybody. However, if you look at the most egregious violators in any industry, you can take the top 10% of the violators who are doing the most damage and really go after those violators with regulations and vigorously pursue that and eliminate the major part of the problems in the industry. I mean, Massey Coal, 85% of the violations. Exxon, same thing. BP, same thing. 85% of the violations that were given and not really enforced or changed in the oil industry went to BP. So you can look at these outstanding violators, and if you bring them back into compliance with industry standards, you've really done 90% of the conservation work that needs to happen. And we're not really taking that kind of approach. This is not a theft of the commons, and this is not I'm responsible for using oil and I have to stop using oil. I mean, that's just sort of diddly squat when you compare it to the breadth of the profit BP gets and the harm they're inflicting. So, you know, there's a real good case here for a vigorous regulation and not target it for the industry, but just for that particular company that's so egregiously violating the regulations we have now.
Thanks, Marilyn. Elsie?
Yeah, that's a good point, Marilyn. And it is going to take it's kind of a triangulated approach, you know, enforcing regulations and publicizing that kind of enforcement, if that's what business requires. It's going to take people like you and me who look at our investment portfolio and see, what are the companies that we're investing in? Are we comfortable that the values that they state right on their website are being lived? You know, when you look at BP's site, they have a list of values. Three of them are performance-driven, and one of them is about safety. One of the things that in the new paradigm BP might consider doing, as other companies that we're working with our soul branding methodology, is literally developing a benchmark of how are you living these values, and each employee is answering that question. It's a way for management to stay on top of performance so that it's not blindsided. And by the way, there were telltale signs that BP was slipping on the safety issue, if anybody was looking.
Yeah, there's some actually vivid evidence about this. We had an interesting comment come in on the website from someone who labels himself Super F88. He's trying to rebrand BP, you know, BP. He thinks maybe blatant polluter, banish petroleum, buy a Prius. I can't read the rest. One of them is biggest. It's a word that begins with P, a Yiddishism that I don't think I'm allowed to say on the air. It's usually used in a derogatory context. But more seriously, Elsie, there is a term called greenwashing. This is when a company acts very sustainable, does press conferences that seem sustainable and makes promises. But perhaps the proof is not in the pudding, that they don't really walk the talk. It's a widespread phenomenon. How do we tell the difference between greenwashing and a company that is getting serious?
Well, you have to look at what are they incenting their people to do? How is the performance of the company calibrated and matched with what their stated goals are? I'm glad that you brought this up because this is, again, looking at this new paradigm. And I keep saying new paradigm because it's an opportunity for leaders to come forward and embrace this way of being. That their American-style marketing has actually reached its peak. You know, I mean, you talked about Marshall McLuhan, or the previous caller talked about Marshall McLuhan. We have taken the expression of marketing to ridiculous heights. And we are so darn good at it that, you know, we're believing our own whatever. It's time now to pull back. And I think BP is a great example because they did come out with a very big brand promise in the UK in the late 90s. And they said BP beyond petroleum. And the UK civil society said, we don't believe that. That is not true. Don't insult our intelligence. Not even 1% of your profits are coming from anything but petroleum.
So you can't just make these statements. You can't use advertising. But what can you do instead?
You can come out transparently and say something like, we are on a path. We recognize that we have a sacred role to play in preserving this earth and in inspiring people to do the best that they can do, including our employees. And we know that that's a role for business and society. We also know that we're forging a new paradigm here. Here's our plan to move ahead. Keep us posted. It's like Ed Koch in New York. How am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Open yourself to feedback. You know, employees are the most trusted source of information about companies now. Employees on the internet. So there's really no place to hide anyway. For companies who are enlightened are engaging employees and saying, share with us. You know, we're going to empower you to be all you can be. And you see improved results in places like Zappos, where
the online shoe.
Exactly.
Company.
You know, where those employees just go the extra mile. You see it in examples of companies who are creating new revenue streams because they're telling their people, if you were living our company values more fully, what kind of products would we have?
But you know, also, as you know, Elsie, what really talks often is money. And companies, big oil companies, have a lot of money to lobby. They have a lot of money to have their say in the legislative process. And, you know, I as a reporter like to follow the money. That would be a way of establishing trust again for BP, which is where they're putting their money for what kind of new energy legislation, given the failure of the climate bill about 2 weeks ago on Capitol Hill. That'd be an interesting place to look. Like, mm-hmm. What kind of regulatory structure are they looking for going forward? If it's surprising in an interesting way, who knows? That could possibly influence. So can
That's
I track
a
money as an early sign of people walking the walk?
Yeah, you can. And, you know, companies that are looking to restore credibility will be willing to demonstrate where they're putting the money, where they're assigning effort and executive talent on what projects.
On which projects. All right. When companies want to live up to their public promises, they call Soul Branding Consultant Elsie Mayo. Elsie, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.